I think President Obama, by going to Cairo, by speaking directly to people around the filters of state-controlled media, was the first step in an opening towards resetting and recasting that relationship with the Muslim and Arab world. It was a pretty bold diplomatic move, I think, something along the lines of Nixon going to China, of course. That was followed up by a concerted and consistent strategy over time that brought to fruition that opening and turned it into a rather fruitful policy for us. The question now is, how can they follow it up? I thought it was very perceptive by the president trying to speak directly to Arabs and Muslims around their governments, which is unusual. We often in diplomacy are going to be state-to-state thing. But in this case, he picked out 7 goals that were going to really resonate with the people of the region, including 3 that had to do with democracy. And I think that has been a frequent comment that we're going to have to wait for the substance. But something that a lot of people have not noticed yet is that just last week, we got the full budget numbers from the administration's budget request to Congress. And in that request, we saw that the Obama administration is in many ways renewing or even increasing U.S. support for democracy and human rights across the Middle East. We saw steady or increased numbers in every country in the region, big increases for 2 major aid instruments, Middle East Partnership Initiative and the Millennium Challenge Corporation. The only exception, and this is kind of an odd exception given the president's speech in Cairo, the only exception was a big cut for democracy activists and governance goals in Egypt.
Well, Egypt is considered a cornerstone of the African continent also, besides being an important factor in the Middle East. Do you think that President Obama's words will reverberate westward and southward in the African continent as well as across the Middle East?
I hope so. Certainly in Northern Africa, there are a lot of Muslims, and it's important that we reset our relationship vis-a-vis those communities also. They certainly worked hard at rolling this speech out in a kind of concerted public diplomacy effort, I think through Twitter, through all sorts of online forums, and through interviews in different places. And so I do think that they generated the kind of attention they needed so that people will watch and listen to his words directly rather than just seeing the reports of them.
From some of the applause in the crowd, it seemed that the crowd was hoping for the president to address the situation of democratization in Egypt. Do you think that they were a little disappointed that there weren't more comments on democratization in Egypt and the attitude towards the Mubarak government?
I don't know. I might disagree slightly with the premise there. I think a lot of people until last week, when both the president in an interview and BBC and Secretary Clinton in remarks last Thursday started commenting openly on human rights and democracy, people were wondering whether they would talk about these issues at all. And so I think a pretty sizable inclusion of the importance of human rights and democracy, of women's rights and religious freedom was important. And I think that was actually very well received. He got some of his biggest applause lines on issues relating to U.S. own record on human rights, including closing Guantanamo, and on the importance of democracy. I think that was when someone shouted out, "I love you," or "We love you." And that was right after the big section on democracy.
I did hear that. There are some who said that the president did speak out about religious tolerance and greater freedom and rights for women and a respect for democracy and personal freedoms. But they said that President Obama should have said more about the situation in Darfur, for instance.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that certainly could have been said. He mentioned, I believe, that when there's violence, it's a problem for all of us. I think he referenced Bosnia.
He mentioned Darfur and Bosnia together
Darfur
in the same
and Bosnia,
breath.
Okay. I do think that mass violence on that scale is something that is one of these problems that link us together that everyone is opposed to and that different societies have to work together to oppose. Maybe Darfur was just not in the geographical focus of who they were talking to. I'm not sure why they chose not to speak about that more prominently.
Does this speech signal the start of a new beginning, a new dialogue between the United States and alienated Muslims around the world?
Well, I hope so. Like I said, I think it's an opening. It's a start. And there's going to have to be not just substantive policy behind these, and the president did note a couple different development-oriented programs, but consistency. We have to follow a concerted strategy over time. But I think this did lay a really strong opening, some groundwork for that. And this was all about respect. When you don't badger or try to pressure people, but you try to persuade. And he asked for their help. He said, "This is a partnership. We're working on these things together, and we have a common stake in pursuing these goals." And I think that's just what we needed right now.
The president also talked about making a sustained effort for dialogue. How do we continue from here to accomplish what the president urged both sides to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. They really are going to have to translate some of these initiatives into programs. The president had an initiative about trying to use scholarships and exchange programs for Muslim students to come to the U.S., trying to encourage them to travel abroad and study and interact with Muslim communities. And I think those kinds of people-to-people dialogue programs, they work slowly and over time, but they're incredibly important for building and strengthening those relationships. So I think you kind of imply there that we all have a part to play in learning about each other and strengthening dialogue. It's not just a matter of government, but it will be interesting to see how many people-to-people programs they might try to start, how much of this might be followed through in state-to-state traditional diplomacy.
There are some that fear that the U.S. has been overreaching by trying to reconcile such wide cultural and unsolvable political differences. Do you think that the speech helped bridge the gap?
I think so. The president didn't shy away from those differences, and I think that's a good first step. When you say, here are our differences, here are some of the more controversial issues, let's talk about them. And when you include tough love, when you say, here are some of the issues where we need your help, I think when you're honest, people respect that, even if they don't necessarily like everything that the president might have said. And that lays a good groundwork for saying some other things. To those who have criticized him for, I guess, reaching out too far to Muslims, I would just point out the incredible strategic importance of making this kind of effort, and I think it's ultimately going to pay dividends.
Well, the president mentioned the word mistrust about four times. What do you think is the significance of that?
Well, it seemed like the Obama strategy, right? We saw this in the campaign. He, first of all, is saying that we share more in common than we have in disagreements. And yet there are some who are intransigent that want to focus extra attention on those differences rather than our common values. But by identifying those common values and by calling people to work together to pursuing those goals, you really can focus on what's possible. You can identify those who are not really about progress. They have a vested interest in opposing change, in opposing progress, in opposing solving problems. And that puts them in a weaker position. And then by drawing people to the president's position, hopefully it makes those previously seemingly insurmountable goals much more possible to achieve.
Some of the president's biggest applause came when he mentioned or quoted principles of the Quran. How do you think he was trying to address the issues of intolerance and extremism that have accelerated terrorism and violence in parts of the Islamic world?
Well, I was certainly drawn to the use not just of the Quran, but of the Bible and of the Talmud. It's very interesting when we note how much those values overlap, how much we kind of share in common in terms of the common religious and cultural orientation, and that these are not necessarily sources of division, but texts that can bring us together, or values that can bring us together. It's interesting that at the same time the president is giving his speech, right, we saw that Osama bin Laden made a big statement, and al-Zawahiri is making a big statement, and even Grand Ayatollah Khamenei was also making a statement. And you get the sense that there are those deeply religious Muslims who are asking what the West has for them, whether there is a certain openness there, whether there's something that the American president might say that would resonate with what they were thinking. And we do need to reach out to that. And I think by quoting the Quran next to the Talmud and next to the Bible, the president hopefully will take a few steps towards that direction of winning over people that maybe were difficult to win over before.
And there's also been some talk, primarily partisan talk here in the United States from the opposition, from the Republicans, that they were afraid that the president was cozying up too much and presenting just a comfortable vision trying to charm the Muslim world. How important was it, do you think, for the president to convince Muslims that U.S. attitudes about Muslims are changing?
Well, that is the big challenge for U.S. foreign policy, I think, today. I referenced Nixon going to China before. That was the great strategic challenge for the U.S. at that time, a country that we had very difficult relations with. But that was a state, that was a government, and that called for a certain kind of strategy. In this case, we have fairly good relationships with the government in the Middle East, with maybe the exception of Syria. But we don't have a good relationship with the people of the region, and for too long we've allowed ourselves to be kind of wedged away from Muslims and from Arabs. And I think this was a necessary and a very important and a very prudent, well thought out strategic opening that the president chose to take and executed quite well.
Is that a goal for the U.S. to help raise Muslim self-esteem? Is that the main idea in convincing Muslims that...
I don't know about raised Muslim self-esteem. I'm not sure that they would characterize it that way. But you do hear this grievance that the U.S. is hegemonic, that the U.S. doesn't respect the sovereignty of Arab countries or their independence. And if you look at U.S. foreign policy in the region, they have a point. We have been somewhat overbearing. We have pursued our interests sometimes at the expense of the welfare and legitimate aspirations of people in the region. And most recently, I think they do have reason to be frustrated with some of our policies in Iraq and, to a certain extent, our neglect of the Arab-Israeli peace process. So it's not a matter of Muslim self-esteem, and certainly that's not something we can do. But when we say that we are approaching Arabs and Muslims with respect, as equal partners, as people that we can work with and people whose help we need, I think that does put us in a much better spot to work together towards solving some of these common problems together.
And what do you think is the best way to calibrate how President Obama's words will be translated into action?
The Obama administration has laid out one statement and said that they're opposed to increased settlements. On democracy and human rights, there's this other standard which I think we should be looking towards. Across the region, we've increased our support for human rights and for democracy activists and for governance-related goals generally, except in Egypt. And I think the importance of Egypt is underscored by the president's decision to make his speech there. And so one of the real tests that the Obama administration has to grapple with right away, and is going to be a test of their seriousness on these goals that they laid out, is whether the U.S. will continue to support democracy activists and reform goals in Egypt, whether we'll put our money where our mouth is. Because in the latest budget, unfortunately, the administration cut the funding for democracy activists by 60%. We just published an article talking about this democracy assistance and the importance of the Obama administration supporting democracy activists in Egypt. Even more important, we just published a rather comprehensive report on how the U.S. can better integrate this reform question into a broader bilateral relationship.